Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. right here on WAFS, Atlanta's Biz 1190. I am your host, Eddie Mayfield, and here at Driven to Business, we like to talk about business. We like to talk about success principles. We like to even discuss failures and learn from them, and we try to have guests that help us do that. By the way, we're streaming live on biz1190.com, and today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. Plus, there will be links on there to our guest and his business, so check us out there. Our guest today is Marshall Cheek. Marshall is the president of Paulson Cheek Mechanical Incorporated. Paulson Cheek Incorporated. They are a mechanical contractor firm. They do services, new construction. Marshall's been in business a long time here. He's a very interesting guy, and we're glad you're here. Marshall, welcome to Driven to Business.
Thank you for inviting me, Eddie.
Marshall, you founded your company back in the late 90s, and I know that you grew up before that in the consulting business. So just tell us a little bit about how you got into the business you're in.
The business I got in was almost pure luck. Got out of Georgia Tech in 1980. Went to work for Alabama Power and just got kind of fascinated with heating, air conditioning, and energy conservation and energy saving measures. Needed to move back to Atlanta to be closer to the family. Got a job with my, at the time, best friend, now my brother-in-law's dad's company. And that launched me into mechanical engineering. Spent 5 or 6 years in a mechanical consulting business, working with mechanical contractors, and just really felt like I could make a difference in the contracting world. So in 87, I jumped out and went to work for a man and started a division for him, changed companies again in 90, and then founded this business in 98. My partner, Dean Paulson, and I have worked together since 84. He was a college kid when he came to work for me.
Wow.
And we've just been together ever since.
You know, Marshall, I grew up in Alabama, and when you say Alabama Power, I think of Reddy Kilowatt, which is a little cartoon figure they always used in their marketing.
Yep, he was the logo back then.
Did you have anything to do with Reddy Kilowatt?
No.
I have a lot of friends. The Alabama Power, of course, is owned, you know, part of the Southern Company empire, and at our company, we've done a bit of business with them. Tell us a little bit about Paulson Cheek. What do you guys do after I flubbed your intro here?
Well, we are a full-service mechanical contracting firm, and we do both engineering and construction and service, commercial and industrial. We travel the Southeast doing mostly industrial distribution plants and some retail and a lot of faith-based work.
Faith-based? Well, like
churches and synagogues.
Oh,
there's
wow.
Just dozens and dozens of churches and synagogues that we've worked in Atlanta. It's a unique challenge that we take very personally with our faith-based business, and we take it as a challenge because we understand how strapped for money most churches are when they're trying to build, and so we would like to give them the best bang for their buck, for a lack of a better word, and that's a unique challenge for us.
You know, I wasn't aware of that until you just, that's interesting. Our company has done, we have done some work for churches, and not as much variable frequency drives are in churches these days. As you know, they're even in our church. Most people that go there don't know that, or even know what a VFD is to start with, but nonetheless, they are kind of hidden in there. But I've always taken the same thing. We've actually, when we've been able to help churches, I guess it's just from the fact that you and I share a bit of a similar background in terms of a faith relationship being somewhat important to us. I always feel like, and I don't know why, but I always feel a bit intimidated in dealing with a church to be sure that we are exactly treating them right and that we're not overcharging them. In a lot of cases, I don't charge them at all. And by the way, that's not an advertisement for doing free work for churches, but just... We have actually done that.
Yeah, well, for us, it's a budget problem. There's always a budget problem with
right.
The church. So, and air conditioning is not something that's attractive. You don't go to church because they have a great air conditioning system.
But you complain if it's not working.
Correct. So our goal is always to give them the best system for the money that they can possibly do. And if that's having to give them the most inexpensive system they can possibly do or some other thing. But we understand the concepts of what it's like to be in a church. I've been on the board of trustees at our church, and so I understand the challenges that are associated with trying to spend donations. And we take that as a very personal thing. I don't know where, somewhere in my upbringing, being the child of Depression-era children, I just don't like to spend anybody's money unnecessarily, and that, so that really gives us a value to the faith-based market.
You know, in our church, somehow, and I do mean somehow, I inherited the HVAC responsibilities for part of our church. I did not volunteer for it, I can tell you that. The guy that was doing it left, and I ended up, so, as you know, in any organization, in any building, if you ask any, if you ask 10 people, is it too hot or too cold, you will get
12 answers.
Exactly. You will get that back. Our companies are a bit similar, Marshall, in that we both offer on-site service to people, which is something I grew up doing and I really enjoy. But I always thought the vocation of field service attracted a rather unique individual. We have a lot of unique individuals that work at our company. I'm sure you do at yours. What's your experience with this field service, guys? And who does well at that?
Well, I read a book a handful of years ago, and it described a service provider as a shepherd. And
it was
talking about the shepherd mentality, the mentality that you want to take care of others before yourself. And so you have to have a certain sense about you that you're spending your money and that you're taking care of your stuff. I think the great analogy on the shepherd for me was football teams. And the shepherds on a football team are the offensive linemen. They run down the field and pick up the wide receiver after somebody's knocked him down. They pick up their running back because that's their baby. That's their guy. And that's what these our techs do. We try to assign a tech a building, and he takes care of that building. It becomes his.
Right.
And so he takes a personal pride, and he has to take a personal pride in the performance of that system and keeping it online and keeping it online and expensively. And that's a... We continue to have the debate, like everybody does, is that something your daddy put in you or your father put in you, your heavenly father? Where did that come from? Where's that sense? And I don't think we can put it in our employees. We have to find it before we hire it.
That's a good point. And we have talked about that with many guests here on Driven to Business, the idea. And I've told this story enough time that it's probably boring to people that listen all the time. But it's not boring to me, so... But I heard Ross Perot speak many years ago. This was long before Ross got into politics or anything. He was just considered a very astute businessman back in, and still is back in those days. But he was talking about how he trained people at his company at that time to be friendly to customers and all that. And they went through a lot of that about things, customer service type issues. And someone at the end of it, he was taking questions, and someone said, "Well, how do you? How do you get these people? And tell us a little more about how you train them to be friendly to customers." And he made a great statement. He said, "You know, why don't you just try hiring friendly people to start with and see if that doesn't resolve all your training issues?" And we've thought that a lot in our company. And I actually, over the years, Marshall, we've kind of changed our hiring and interview process where that we I always hired for a long time just strictly on skills. And I learned that's a mistake. Particularly when you can have a very skilled person that can't get along with anyone.
Correct.
And if you've got them in front of customers, that's a recipe for disaster.
We rarely get complaints about people's lack of skills.
Right.
It's the way they treated somebody.
Exactly.
And we've tried for years. And we sat down one time, I don't know how many years we'd been in business, and we looked at our employee list. And one of the things we noticed was that every employee who had lasted more than 3 years, we had hired because someone in the company had recommended it. And it was not somebody we'd gotten out of a want ad or a poster in a supply house. It was this guy knew this guy. And so he vouched for his character. And so the character that we hired was the character that that man was. And so he then hired someone of similar character because birds of a feather flock together. So what we've done is worked on that concept of only taking recommendations from people we already do business with, we already know, we already respect there. Because I don't think at our level, when you're hiring grown-ups, that is. And I can teach somebody a lot of things. I can't teach them to care. I was going to say to give a fill-in-the-blank, which is the expression we use. But you can't teach that. You can't. That's just, it comes from somewhere, not your employer.
You know, I always think of the Jim Collins thing when he talks about his analogy of a leader of a business, his job is not, if he thinks of a business as a bus, the leader of the business is not, his primary job is not to drive the bus, it's to be sure that the right people are in the right seats on that bus. And I think part of what you're saying is exactly that.
Yes, that's what we talk about a lot is the bus.
It really matters who you have out there in front of people, and I think it does. Talk to us about the moment, because you guys have an office over in Alabama as well. You don't?
No, sir.
No, you close that down.
No, we never had one. We have worked in all states, but we just travel when necessary. We are thinking about moving to the great state of Texas, but we haven't made that commitment yet.
Actually moved here from the great state of Texas to get it going back here. Well, I was going to ask you about the challenges. So you do work in other states.
Yes, we do work.
We do that as well. We actually have offices in three states, but we work in other states. But there are challenges. There's big challenges about doing, and I don't do long-term projects like you do, but there are challenges with working in another state with regulatory issues, and not only that, just the fact that you're not anywhere near, you can't jump in your car and run down there and resolve a problem that could be going on that afternoon.
And that company, you know, it's interesting because that ties right back to our previous conversation. If we're going to go to Ellisville, Mississippi, cross at Arkansas, some of the finer metropolitan areas that we've worked in the last couple of years, that person out there has got to be somebody that I trust at the level that it's, you know, I've given them a checkbook and it's my money and I expect to get it back. And I'm not talking about just money. It's that whole concept. Because, yes, we can only visit so many times. So it's back to that same character issue. It's all about that core value that employee has.
I was saying while you were talking to me, you had made a statement earlier about that you rarely got a complaint about skills. You got them about soft touch issues we might talk about with a number of years ago, our company did a survey of our customers, and we found out to my dismay that this was many, many years ago, that only like 73% of our customers were very satisfied with their last. And as a technical kind of guy, I was offended by that. But when we began to dig into it, it was not technical issues. It was the things that I had really been ignoring in the company. And when we really tied it down, it all had to do with customer service things. It almost never had anything to do technical. And yet, as a person who comes from a technical perspective, that's sometimes hard to convince yourself of that. Look, I did a good job. What's your complaint? I mean, it's running and it's looking good. Let's talk more after the break about that. You are listening to Driven to Business here on WAFS Atlanta's Biz 1190. I'm Eddie Mayfield. You will be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I am Eddie Mayfield, and we're glad you're here. We're talking with Marshall Cheek, the president of Paulson Cheek. You and I have been talking a little bit. We're talking a little bit about the idea of customer service, the idea of satisfying customers, the idea of that it's that in technical type businesses like ours, where we do technical things, and that's not to say that we don't have to do them well. You do.
Correct.
You know, I've been surprised at times with this. You know, when you tell a customer that you're in the whatever business you're in, whether it's air conditioning, auto repair, whatever, I used to spend a lot of time trying to prove to them that we were very, very good at what we do. And we are very good at what we do. We are very good at what we do. And to finish my story about the survey we did, we then made a lot of changes after we discovered that people were not that happy with us. We made a lot of changes. This was many years ago. And we still measure our satisfaction. And it's up now to it has been 100% at times, although I don't advertise that because nobody can maintain 100%. But we do advertise that we're 98%. And of the companies in our business, that's the highest anybody I know of. And we made no technical changes to do that. It was just where we set up, and this is something you constantly have to keep spinning the wheel on. We changed our hiring practices, for one thing, to only hire people that were friendly and nice to people. The second thing was we started letting everyone know that not returning a phone call was just not permissible in our company. And if we tell somebody that we're going to ship something on Thursday and it's not going to ship, we don't wait for them to call us. We call them. Those kinds of things are what resolve those kind of problems. It's just that the customer knows you care about it.
Right. We have two different worlds we live in. We live in our service world and we live in our construction world.
Right.
In our service world, it's an interesting concept for us. is it's simple things like when you pulled up in your service van, did you park in front of the store? Or did you park and take a customer spot? Or did you pull around the side of the store? Did you go in at the prime time of their business? Or did you make an appointment to go when it would work for them? And it's simple little things like that for us that makes the difference. We're not that nobody wants us there. Nobody can, you know, is just excited that we're coming to service their air conditioning
right.
equipment. So we got this little expression we use around the office that we want to be known as invisible mechanical. We don't want you to know we were there. Nobody ever tells the story at the dining room, at the dinner party, at church on Sunday about the great service they got, but they'll tell everybody about what
absolutely.
Went wrong.
So, absolutely.
And in the construction business, we even are in a more unique position because we're selling to general contractors who are building buildings for some owner. Our customer built that church. Our customer's not the church.
Right.
So my customer doesn't use my air conditioning system. His customer does. So what we're selling that customer is really not even air conditioning. It's about our service in putting their construction project together. And we have to remember that times we're not in the air conditioning business. And that's very hard to get through to technically based people. And as we like to say at Paulson Cheek, you can't swing a dead cat by the tail that hits somebody walking around there with an engineering degree because we like that mindset. But you've got to break them of thinking technical competency is what it's all about. It's got to be both.
That's a great point. You know, I joke around with our guys and particularly new guys that start with us in field service, and I'll tell them that, you know, we do a lot of work in industrial plants and you're around processes and so forth. And usually when we're there, often something very critical is down, and like it's a big deal. Everybody there, that you get it going. And I always tell them that, you know, the longer that machine is down, the better dressed the people that come to ask you when it's going to be running are going to start being. You know, they keep when the guys with ties start coming out asking you how long this is going to be. Then you know you're under some pressure there to get that running.
And we understand that what we try to instill in our guys is that the best we can hope to be and what we strive to be is we understand that we're part of your process. If you're
right.
If we're working in a plant that makes, I don't know, ketchup packs.
Right.
Then what we're doing has to impact them profitably.
Right.
And so when we work for people, we keep that in mind, is what are we doing to add to their process and what are our processes doing? I think one of our biggest learning failures was when we first started the business and there weren't but about four of us and we'd have a problem. And one of us would scramble. We'd figure out whose schedule was clear, who had a truck, who had the tools, and they'd
right.
drive at that and we were pulling our hair out. But we'd eventually get there and solve the problem. And then we wised up one day and hired a guy, put him in a truck, fully tooled up. Now he can go fix those problems. And we thought, we got it now. Because when you call and complain, all I have to do is call Dale, and Dale runs out there and fixes
right.
it. Customer didn't care how painful it was for me to fix the problem. He cared that I had a problem.
Right.
So my processes weren't important to him. It was how our processes impacted his process that was important to him. And businesses forget that all the time. They build in systems that work for them but add no value to their customer. And that when they've done that, they've wasted their time and effort. Jim Collins mentions that in Good to Great when he talks about technology is not the end all. It's just another tool in your toolbox.
Exactly. You're exactly right. Marshall, we both have small businesses, but it amazes me sometimes how these large businesses that have been very, very successful, they forget things like that and almost customer proof their business to where you can't get in there if you have a problem. It's basically roadblocks put up to keep you from getting to anybody that can resolve your problem, and how maddening that is.
Well, answer this question: to whose benefit did we go to self-service at Kroger and Home Depot and Delta Airlines? It wasn't because I demanded it. It's because the service they were providing was worse than the service I could provide myself. Speaks volumes about how they looked at their processes and built them not around their customer, but they didn't fix their own problem. If you'd have had better cashiers, better clerks, better ticket agents, I wouldn't have wanted to go to a kiosk. I would have much rather dealt with a human who could have gotten me out the door, but you can't, so I will. And that's
yep.
just terrible business.
It is, and even though, and you're in a technology business in some ways, the same way that I am. Technology is a good thing to have, and we do you know, it's not that we fight technology. It's just, as you said, I think that's a great thing to say, is it needs to be a tool to further your dealing with your customers. And if it's not a tool, then get away from it and you know, completely back out of that deal. Let me ask you this. The business you're in, the market you serve, is it an expanding market, the business you're in, or is it a mature market?
It's a very mature market. Construction industry as a whole, I've been dealing with the same people for 20, 25 years. So ours is kind of what we are. We're in the construction world in Atlanta, and it is what it is, and the customers are who they are. And so we have to, the only thing that happens to us is new blood comes into existing customers.
Which, but that means you have to be, and not to be put too crass a point on it, but you have to take the business from someone a lot of times.
There's almost no question that every one of our customers that we're dealing with, if we find them as a quote-unquote new customer, that means they're now somebody else's former customer.
You know, you've been talking about the principles of good customer service, which is basically what we've been discussing here and for the most part of the morning. But, you know, with does it ever surprise you to think about that the attributes that make you a good human being are the same attributes that make you that make for good customer service?
Trying to get my head around somebody calling me a good human being.
I didn't call you. I was just, it was an academic
sure
question.
Sure they are. It's the same concept. It's the concept of the golden rule. In fact, it's not quite the golden rule. I always rephrase the golden rule. Don't treat others as you would want to be treated. Treat others as they want to be treated.
Right.
And that's what it all comes down to. How would you do this if you were on the other side of the table?
I had a cynical boss used to tell me that the golden rule was the guy with the gold gets to make the rule. That's another take on that thing. Have you seen in your business customer expectations change through the years that you've been in business?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everything's got to be quicker,
right?
Quicker. And that's technologically driven, and it is absolutely a level of expectations, and we take that as a challenge. We think that because we feel like we're working harder at what we do, and we've got great employees who are very, very smart, that's a challenge for us to separate ourselves from the others.
I agree with that, and we have the same thing. It used to be you'd tell somebody you'll get back to them next week or next month or something. That's just not acceptable anymore. They want to reach you on your cell phone right now by email, by text, whatever. There's no putting them off, and it makes us all work a little harder, but it makes life more interesting, I suppose, too. You are listening to Driven to Business. Our guest today is Marshall Cheek, and we'll be back in just a moment. Stick around.
She was terminally pretty. She held him up, and he held her for ransom in the heart of the cold, cold city. He had a nasty reputation as a cruel.
Welcome back to Driven to Business. We hope you're enjoying the program. Our guest today is Marshall Cheek, with the president of Paulson Cheek. And we're just having a little bit of fun talking about business. Speaking of that, here's a question I always like to ask anybody that owns their own business or that's an entrepreneur of any sort. Is it fun doing that?
Oh, yeah. We have a blast. We are incredibly irreverent, incredibly rude to each other. We actually hired back employee number one. He started back today after spending some time at some other places, and he came back. He was, and he looked at his watch, and it had taken 2 hours before I had made some smart aleck remark about him. Yeah. So,
you know, I think fun, I think business people understand the concept of it, but they, unless you're an accountant or CPA, I don't know how they have any fun, but other people, normal people, you know, in business, but the, you know, fun is an underrated motivator, I think.
Sure.
And I think people that you can do something with your life that's no fun, but to state the obvious, it's no fun. So,
well, for us, it started before I was at Paulson Cheek, actually. And you can't yell at your customers, right? You can't yell anywhere. You got to be professional with your customers and professional out in there. And so there's got to be a safe haven for you to let off some steam. So
right.
Part of the things that we do at the office is we argue with each other. We got a bunch of engineers and a bunch of people that have been in the business for a long time. We all have opinions. So we encourage the disagreements. We encourage the letting off of steam. We encourage encouraging each other. And so we are who we are, because sometimes you have to go out in public and you have to be somebody you're not.
Right.
So if you can't come back home and be who you really are, then you're gonna get frustrated.
You know, my personality is that I do not like being a policeman. And so, you know, and we've had people with us in the past that just kept making me be a policeman. And I've had to sort of have a talk and say, look, if you continue to make me play the role of policeman, you can't be here, because I don't want to do that. And on the other side of the coin, we've had, through the years, we've had employees that were so cantankerous and hard to get along with that they, you know, they sort of put a pall over the whole place.
That's
and
right.
And when I was younger, I would just put up with it from thinking that we need these skills. I have actually, as I've gotten older, gotten a little bit faster about deciding we don't need that person in the company, because it really hurts a lot more than them. And it's a lot more stress on me, but it's a lot more stress on everyone in the office. And life has enough stress without you piling on more like that.
Yeah, the gossip and the guy who's stirring the pot, as we like to say.
Right.
That's right. You need to move on. We can fix whatever your problem is if you'll let us know, but don't just walk down the hallway. Dave Ramsey's big on that concept, that if the
right.
person you're complaining to doesn't have the authority to fix that problem, then you're just being a problem.
That's a good, I haven't heard that. That's a good point.
And one of the things, I'll credit Bud Parker. I don't know if Bud ever listens to the show, but he was a boss of mine back 100 years ago, and he once told me that the guy you fire that you shouldn't have never hurts you as bad as the guy you didn't fire that you should have. And that sounds cold, but
no.
Remember, if we've got 100 employees or however many we got, we can't let one. Those other 99 are trying to feed their families and save for retirement, and we can't let that one drag us all down, as much as our heart would like to do that. And there's some things that you and I can't fix.
You know, I think as long as, and I have made this mistake, I'll confess, in our company of perhaps not being, I've made a mistake, two mistakes. I've made the mistake of hiring too quickly. I've made the mistake of firing too slow at times. When, you know, again, back to Jim Collins, he has, I don't know if it's in Good to Great or one of his other books, but he talks about that if you look at someone working for you and you can ask the question that, knowing what you know today, would you hire that person for that decision, for that position? And if the answer is no, well, then you probably need to give that some thought about what you need to do about that, if that person is just not right for that position. Now, you can do a couple of things, and we've done this, and I'm sure you have, where you can take someone that's not right for the hold you got them in, but they're a sharp person, and you can move them over into some other position. We've done that very successfully at our company. I suppose you have too.
Yes, sir, we have. And that tends to be a technical concept, though, right?
Right.
They don't have the technical skill set to do job A, but they have the technical skill
right.
set. But if they have a personality problem that's creating, that's moving.
That's different, exactly.
And the thing that we use, the go-by, is if the guy walked in the morning and put his letter of resignation on your desk, what would your reaction be? Would it be one of, whew,
yeah.
now I don't have to deal with that anymore?
Right.
Or would you make him a counteroffer? And if you answer that question, wow, sure, I'm glad you resigned, then it's time to move on.
That's a very and I like simple, because I'm a simple person, and that's actually a very simple way of actually evaluating people in a way. It's a very simple evaluation of sort of from your gut mm-hmm. evaluations of what you really do. Think about this, Marshall. Since you started your own firm and came out of the consulting business into your own firm, has there been anything about that? And you've been in business a long time now, so this may have to go back a little ways. But was there anything that surprised you about that? Having your own company?
Yeah, there were. I had a list of 10 things that I thought my previous boss did wrong that I would never do. That list is down to about 4 now.
Right.
Because it is. It's, first of all, you have to understand that you're in business because you're in business. And I think probably one of the most overused words in the English language, especially in modern American conversations about economy, is the concept of an entrepreneur. We're not all entrepreneurs. Most people that start their own business are technicians. They were the cupcake maker who thought they could make a better cupcake.
Right, you're right.
The car, and they're not really. And then they get out and start a business, and they can't do that because they've got to run the business. They can't make the cupcake.
Right.
They can't fix the car because they're running the business. So at some point, what you've got to recognize is that you either don't leave the business because you just think you're the best car mechanic. Leave that present employee because you want to run a business.
Right.
Because you spend all day with the accountants and the insurance guy and the landlord and the and you are the human resources department. So I think that's where most people get frustrated and what things change. And I think that's where we have had some fun with it is both my partner and I's dads were both small business owners. They're both pharmacists, actually. And so we came from that background of watching a guy run a business. And that's what we wanted to do.
I think that's a great point. And I do, I'm the same way. And you're right. On the one hand, a good technician or, as you said, cupcake maker, whatever, that does have good business skills is probably the most likely person, is more likely to succeed in that business than someone that knew nothing about making cupcakes and started a cupcake business. I mean, that's a much more likely scenario, assuming you can do it. I know that even though I was fortunate enough for the fellows I worked for in Texas, they let me completely run what turned into a fairly large department out there. And I thought all about it. I was still surprised on my own when I had my own business, how much I depended on those guys for the big decisions. You know, I would make a bunch of decisions and I would think I was making all the decisions. But when it really came down to the crunch, I always go ask those guys, okay, what do I do here? And then I sort of put it back on their plate on the big, big decisions. And suddenly it dawned on me after having my business for a couple of years, I have nobody to go to and ask this of. And, you know, I'm going to live with this, whatever I say. That's kind of sobering.
It is. I'm fortunate to have a great partner. And we are dissimilar in personalities and very, very similar in our core beliefs and values. And so we are able to discuss things from different perspectives and different points of view and come to common decisions about those things. And we were very fortunate when we first started the business to have a guy who ran a very, very successful business be a mentor to us.
Right.
Act as our board of directors.
That's so helpful.
We were able to bounce ideas off of him until about 5 years in, and he said, all right, you guys got this now. So we've got this now. But we've divided the business into very different pieces that each of us run that we each get very passionate about, and I don't bother him about what he's deciding about, and he doesn't bother me about what I'm deciding about, and we trust each other. It's like being married. Yeah.
You may appreciate this. I was interviewed one time, and they asked me early on in my business what was the main thing that kept me motivated to keep going, and I thought about it, and I told them, I think terror had a lot to do with it. I was terrified about going out of business, absolutely terrified, and it kept me going.
We had an aha moment back about 3 or 4 years in, when I had a guy ask me to define what a successful project was. And
right.
So I started looking at that question, and I started asking, well, it depends on who's asking the question. Long story short, when we boiled what we do down to its core, I don't mean to sound like my partner's greedy. He's not. But he's much more attuned to money than I am, and I'm
right.
much more attuned to customer happiness. And what was interesting about what we did is when we boiled it down to its core, if he wanted to drive the business to make money, then he would do things a certain way. If I wanted to drive the business to make customers happy, I would do things a certain way, and they were the same.
Uh-huh.
There was no conflict between whatever motivated you. And a lot of businesses aren't like that. You know, if GM wants to make more money on an Impala, then some engineer is going to argue that an accountant is going to argue that they can make the steel thinner,
right,
or the leather not as thick, the engine, you know, and some engineer is going to talk about quality. Well, we don't have that problem in the business we in. You want to drive it to quality, it's the same questions and the same process as you want to drive it to making more money. And so his motivation and mine, while they may be different, they work towards the same common goal.
I always have sort of had I've had a very strong opinion for some years that the level of that profits are, and I'm not particularly a money motivated person either, but I've come to realize, you know, that without profits, you won't be doing anything in a business. You know, you can say the purpose of our business is to provide jobs for our employees. We'll try that without profits.
Right.
You know, it's not going to last. And I think about a company called WebVan. You remember them? I'm not here in Atlanta. And my wife and I, we were using their services. And WebVan, for those that don't know, it was an online thing. You could order groceries. They bring them to your house. And we had kids at home then, so we were cooking a lot at home. And they will bring them to your house. They would even unload them, put them in your pantry. It was and the price was about what you bought the groceries for at Kroger. Man, they had high ratings. I mean, fantastic customer service. These guys came up in nice vehicles, delivery vehicles. They wore little uniforms. They looked great when they came in. And I mean, everybody that used them was very happy. But WebVan went out of business. Because the fact of the matter is that business model did not work. There was no profits in that. You can't sell, as it turns out. You cannot deliver groceries to somebody's house and stack them in there for the same price that you can go to Kroger and get them. That's just it. And if you're going to demand that kind of services, if that's what you want, then you pay for that service. And I've sort of taken that to us. You know, we want to provide the absolute best service there is, but, you know, you can't give things away. And I know you face this, and you work in a bid and spec business as well. And I'll talk to you more about that when we come back, because I think that is I'd be interested in hearing your takes on that, because that is something that frustrates me to death as a bid and spec, and I don't even know how to do it. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're streaming live on biz1190.com, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield, and as always, and as I continue to say, but it's true, we're glad you're here. We're talking with Marshall Cheek with Paulson Cheek. And Marshall, you've not only been a very successful business guy, you've you have some interesting hobbies. You and I share the hobby of playing guitar. Tell us about that a little bit.
Oh, I'm not very good. I just have a lot of good stuff. You know, I have expensive toys. The guitar playing is one of those interesting things. I find most of my buddies that are guitar players tend to be engineers like me. It's a very structured organization. It's a very structured mathematical thing. I find that very interesting. And I'm a little bit OCD when it comes to my hobbies. But I tell you, the interesting thing about the guitar for me is that it's taught me about people. And
right.
What it's taught me about people is there's a difference between skills, knowledge, and talents. And I have a lot of knowledge about playing the guitar. I have next to no talent. And the skill and knowledge can only carry you so far. And then at some point, it's talent. And we apply that in our hiring and the people we do.
Right.
At some point, I can't overcome your lack of talent.
You know, I always say that when I walk, people have heard me play before. When I walk in with a guitar case, they're always hoping there's a machine gun in there.
Somebody let the cat out from under the rocking chair.
But the... you know, one thing about, I think, music and anything like that is, you know, a lot of us that learned to play, and there's various levels of everything. You know, I'll go hear someone that's really, really good play, and I'll come home prepared to burn my guitar. It's like, you know, I'm never going to be
sell my stuff
anywhere near that league. But it's an enjoyable thing to do in the evening by yourself, isn't it? Just to sit down and play.
Yeah, I have the same guitar that I bought when I was in college, and my wife would get mad at me if I didn't tell you that I borrowed the money from her to buy that guitar. And it still sits in our bedroom, and I tinker with it all the time and play the same five songs constantly. But yes, it's a relaxing thing. You can sink into that and do other things and get your head clear to what we're doing. And I take up lots of hobbies like that. I've started fishing lately, and I fish about like I play the guitar, mediocre, but it just gets you out and gets your head somewhere else, because those of us who are passionate enough to own our own business are so passionate about it, we never turn it off. And we actually have to have some kind of outside force, for lack of a better word, that forces us to get away from it. Otherwise, I think I'd just eat, live, and breathe Paulson Cheek all the time.
You know, we have one of our EMA colleagues, Andrew Tweedy, in here with us today. And Andrew and I play guitar at Mountain Park First Baptist Church, but Andrew used to play guitar with you.
Correct.
At Mountain Park United Methodist Church.
Yep, we met in the middle school band a million years ago.
Something like that, yeah. Good to be here, Eddie.
And we were fortunate enough to have Andrew play at our daughter's wedding a little over a year ago, and in fact, I got to play with Andrew in that wedding. It's not something you see every day, a father's playing guitar at his daughter's wedding, but that was
a good time. And, you know, Marshall, I think, sells himself short as far as, you know, talent and all that goes. That whole thing went pretty well until I forgot that I was supposed to be playing the recessional at the end of the wedding. So everybody's sitting there looking at the program like, Where's the guy with the guitar?
Andrew, by the way, is also a very good guitar player, and I do play with him, and I enjoy that. Marshall, you know, you talked about sort of getting away from the business. Any business or career, not just you don't have to own a business to do this, can be totally consuming. And both of us, any of us, or all three of us, we could come up with a number of probably stories about how we've seen it destroy families, where someone just got so consumed with the business it destroyed families. What's your advice to anybody that is perhaps has those leanings?
Well, I think part of it is there's a myth going around that there's a work-life balance that you have to come to, and I don't buy into that story as much as I buy into the fact that I am who I am.
Right.
And because I am who I am, I do what I do, and the balance is whatever I deem it to be. I've got a wonderful wife, and she keeps me very grounded, and that drives what we do. Everything, she supports the business. She's interested in the business. I'm interested in what she does. She's interested in what we do. And so the balance is that we find a way to make our lives our lives. And you don't turn a switch off. I've tried all those metaphors. I've heard about the trouble tree in your front yard. When you get out of the car, you hang your problems on the trouble tree. Nah.
Or kick the dog, the neighbor's dog.
You just are who you are. I see so much of that. I think if you have that, there's a relationship with Patty and I that just is, no matter where I worked, I always gave it 200%, and I give her 200%. And so it doesn't, there's no balance there. It's all in all phases.
You know, I think at the end of all of our lives, what we're going to all measure our lives by are really relationships. And I don't think there's any other, I don't know anyone, I'm not sure we're ever going to be on a deathbed to speak of. I heard Jerry Seinfeld talk about, why won't you ever get in that? There's a deathbed. I mean, who sells those? but you know, even in business, I think what you're talking about, you know, the enjoyable part of business, I think for both of us, would be relationships in the business. That's the important, that's the fun part of the business, really.
That's right. I've known my partner for 27 years. I've known most of the customers I've known, I consider friends. I've known forever. We have relationships that transcend business. I know their kids' names. I know where their kids go to school, their dogs, what their hobbies are. And it just is a relationship. At the end of the day, I don't know that people are buying from me for price or for service. Zig Ziglar, America's salesman, once said, when all things are equal, people would rather buy from their friends than a stranger. So you right. don't need more customers. You need more friends. And so,
I'm a big Zig Ziglar fan.
And so you end up, there's got to be a touch there. I think that corporate culture thing is part of that. There's got to be a connection between you and your customers that transcends air conditioning, variable speed drives, donuts, whatever it is. There's a relationship there that goes way beyond that. And if it's not there, then you've just turned your business into a commodity. And if you've turned your business into a commodity, then I can't imagine it being fun.
Hey, by the way, before we get off the air here, we will have the links to your business on eddiemayfield.com. But just for the folks that are listening now, perhaps where they can write it down, what is your website address?
www.paulsoncheek.com.
Is it no dash?
No dash, no and.
Okay.
We had an and guy that worked for us, and he never did anything, so we fired him.
Got rid of him.
Yeah, got rid of him. So just Paulson Cheek.
Hey, do you think it's easier to found a company now than back when we did it? Is there any difference?
No, I think it's much harder by the day. And I look back and think that if you get regrets in life and you try not to have any, I think I waited too long. I look right. at my dad starting his business with his father-in-law and in 62, and I think it was much easier then now. I think the regulations, the tax codes, the OSHA requirements for us, the Family Medical Leave Act. I mean, every time we get a new regulation, it limits the way that I can run my business.
And as we were talking over lunch, it's not just existing regulations. We are unsure about what's coming, and that is kind of hard to plan for something, and you have no idea.
Correct.
I think uncertainty is a huge killer. Just as a younger guy, you know, starting out in my career, I've had people tell me up front that because they don't know what the regulations are going to be or what the rule is going to be next year or how the law is going to be enforced next year, they could make decisions at this point. So I think uncertainty, yeah, is a huge killer.
I think one of the simple things for your generation, it was a no-brainer for us to buy a house.
Right.
Because we knew that the house was going to be worth more and we were going to get a tax break. I don't think that mortgage interest payment deduction is going to make 10 more years.
So if you're
an Andrew Tweedy or an Amanda Hall, my daughter, you got to make a different financial decision than you and I made, Eddie. It was an easy one for us and our parents.
That's exactly right. And I don't know what I am, as I think most entrepreneurs are and most business owners, I'm the eternal optimist about this. Our business, despite all you may hear about, our business has done very well the last few years, as I know yours has. And so it's not all doom and gloom out there, and I don't want anyone listening to think that we're doom and gloom about it. We're not.
No, we're not. You worry about that. You don't worry about being happy. You just are happy. You worry about the other things that might make you unhappy.
That's exactly. Just
human nature.
And I do think that as we both have kids coming along and grandkids and all that kind of thing, that you worry about what has been so wonderful here in the United States, where a redneck like me from Alabama can start a business and do pretty well at it, and even a guy from Georgia like you, even further down the level than that, can do it. Marshall, thank you for being on the program today.
Thank you, Eddie, for having me.
Great guest. Very interesting to hear about your business. Andrew, thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
We'll see you guys again next week. You're with Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. See you at 11 o'clock next Saturday morning. Goodbye.